Welcome, welcome, welcome. Welcome back to Locked On 76ers. I'm your host, Keith Pompey. Happy Monday to you. It's Monday, April the 6th. And as promised, I told you I would have Mr. Mark Narducci back. What's up, Mark? How you doing?
All right, Keith. Doing great. Good to talk to you.
Great to talk to you. Now, look, today we're going to talk about his second part of his 12 series in regards of what he calls the Golden 12. He's going back and starting from number 12 all the way to number 1 on the Golden Games and the Golden Sixers. How do I say it? I don't want to butcher it.
Most memorable playoff games of the Sixers.
Okay, most memorable Sixers playoff games. So right now we're at number 11, and this is like, I'm going to call it the World Be Free game, Mark. This is when World Be Free, it was what, in May 1st, 1977, World Be Free scored 27 points as the 76ers defeated the Boston Celtics 83-77 in a deciding Game 7 of their Eastern Conference semifinals. Now, Mark, this is early. I mean, you know, World Be, we all know he's from New York. He came out of NAIA Guilford College. He was the 23rd overall pick in the 1975 draft. But he was basically known as in the same draft class as Daryl Dawkins, correct?
That's right. They had taken Dawkins fifth overall, and then they took three in the second round that year, or in the draft year, yes.
Now, basically, would you say this game right here, it was kind of like a coming out party for him?
That's exactly it, Keith. I mean, everyone knew of him, and this was his second season in the NBA. And during the regular season, he had averaged 16.3 points per game coming off the bench. So he was a guy that was providing instant offense early in his career. And he wasn't a starter, but he was a guy, and we talked to him for the story. He never met a shot he didn't like, you know, and he wasn't bashful. And he certainly wasn't bashful in this Game 7, Keith, because he took 27 shots in one of the real defensive struggles that the Sixers have won maybe in their playoff history with the Celtics or with anybody else.
Now, look, yo, Mark is kind of being a little modest. He keeps saying we talked to him. Mark did all this. Like, Mark Narducci spent his time talking to World Be Free. He spoke to Gene Shue, who, in my mind, is the greatest executive that ever come, like, the Sixers have ever had. Pat Williams. But he spoke to, after I said it, I was like, But Pat Williams was the greatest executive the Sixers had. I mean, he was the guy in charge when they won the championship with Dr. J, you know. He was the one assembling his team. He basically, the thing about it is, Pat Williams attended college at Wake Forward with Guilford's coach, Jack Jensen. And that's how he came out about of, you know, realizing that World Be Free would be a great pick for the 76ers. That's crazy.
Well, his college coach told Williams, you know, he's going to drive you crazy and everything, but he's also going to do some great things. So I would advise you to take him. And, of course, Jack McMahon, who was the Sixers' assistant and their personnel guy, did such a great guy, such a good job, Keith, you know, getting guys from these smaller schools. Remember, he got Andrew Toney later on from Louisiana Lafayette. He got Mo Cheeks from West Texas State. So they had a history of these guys from the smaller schools, and Free certainly one of them. And this was a game, actually, that Free remembers a lot about. And he had a lot of good details about everything he remembered. And I said, you took 27 shots. He says, I would have taken more if I could have.
So outside of him taking 27 shots, him scoring 27 points, what really stands out to you to make this number 11 on your list?
Well, first of all, it's a game seven, and it's against the Boston Celtics. So you know that first of all, you know, is a rivalry. It vaulted them onto the, as you mentioned, Eastern Conference Finals against Houston, of all places. Houston was in the Central Division at that time. And then they beat Houston, and then they lost in six games in the finals to Portland. But the other thing is, this was a really, really good Celtics team, Keith. I mean, you talk about Hall of Famers, JoJo White, John Havlicek, Dave Cowens, Charlie Scott. It's four Hall of Famers in your lineup right there. I think their other starter was Curtis Rowe, the ex-UCLA great. And in this game, the real key was Charlie Scott and JoJo White took turns guarding Free. And not only did they have trouble with Free, they had trouble finding their offense. They were, the two of them, a combined 10 for 38 from the field. So it was a combination of a Game 7, a really good Celtics team, still with, you know, really great Hall of Fame players, and the Sixers were able to outlast them. And obviously, they needed everything they could get from Free, because nobody shot well. Dr. J was 6 for 19 that game. Wow. Gee, Doug Collins, a real sharpshooter, he was just 3 for 11. So even though Free was 10 for 27, he kept shooting them. He made all 7 of his foul shots, and as you said, it was really his coming out party.
Yeah, it was. And the thing is, it's weird because there's always one game that catapults you. And it just seems like this was the game that catapulted them, you know, to basically going on to the NBA Finals. I mean, we all know they ended up losing that year to Portland. But at the same time, it seems like this was the game. Let's take a commercial break and we'll be right back. All right, now, the thing about World, does World, I know we talked about it, but does World, does he put a lot of emphasis in his career on this game? Does he say that this game, I'm pretty sure he had a lot of confidence. Let's face it, when he was at Guilford College, he was a sharpshooter. He did a lot of things. But did he say that, you know, anything that really stood out to him? Now, you're talking about two Hall of Famers who guarded him. He was basically baking both of them, scoring at will against them. Was there anything that he says that he took from this game that can carry on with his career?
He said it got great confidence. The thing about it is, though, Keith, he got hurt the next round in Game 3 against Houston, and he suffered a collapsed lung. He broke 3 ribs, and he missed time. He didn't return until Game 2 of the NBA Finals. So this was really his moment that year, and he was never anywhere close to 100% in the NBA Finals as well. So this was really kind of like a turning point for him. And the other thing that he said that was amazing, and we take it for granted because everything's on television these days, but he says, you know, the game was on television. It was on ABC. He says everyone who played wanted to be on ABC and be on television. And he says, and you always wanted to do it against the Boston Celtics. He says the Celtics mystique and all that. He says as players, you know, we were sucked into that. We really were. And that's why it was really such a memorable game for him. And plus the fact that he knew his teammates weren't hitting, and they had to depend on him in this game.
Yeah, like you said, he knew his teammates weren't hitting, and you know, and you depict this in your article, you know. Okay, so while Free missed 17 shots in that game, which is, you know, 10 for 27 isn't exactly good. I mean, the Sixers starters, Julius Erving, Doug Collins, Henry Bibby, Caldwell Jones, and George McGinnis shot a combined 17 for 53, 32%. You know what I mean? And he said it was more of a Free, when you asked him about that, he said it was more of a defensive battle, you know, back then. You know, he said the game was so physical, and in the playoffs, they let you, you know, really get physical. He said you could actually knock someone out, and if you didn't get up, they put somebody else in there and carried you off the court. So I'm imagining it was like the survival of the fittest in this game. And it was a physical game, and he did whatever he could, you know.
Yeah,
so.
And Keith, the other thing is the fourth quarter score, Boston 14, Sixers 12. That kind of shows you what kind of a game it was. And by the way, he says if there wasn't hand checking and anything like that, he could have doubled his output. And he wasn't really kidding. That's how confident he was. He said it was just so hard in those days to do that with the hand checking and the physical play that they let you get away with. And another interesting thing about some of these older games, Keith, in the time, look at minutes played. The Celtics had four guys who played 41 or more minutes in that game. I mean, nowadays that would be unheard of in a regulation game like that. But the minutes played by the people in those days was quite a bit. JoJo White and John Havlicek both played 47 minutes. Havlicek, that was his second to last season, you know, so yeah, he was no youngster then. But so these guys had a lot of endurance back then.
Yeah, and it has. And it's funny because, like, when you look at it, you know, here are two teams who are who are the rivals in the Eastern Conference, and they kind of sort of were back then, and they're meeting up before they get to the conference finals. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah. So that was a great conference semifinals, you know, for people to watch, for people in Philadelphia, for people in Boston, so to speak, because you're going up against your arch rival, you know, in the semifinals.
Yeah, there's no question. And it was, you know, you talk about a seven-game series, and, you know, Boston wins the first game. The Sixers win the second and third. Boston ties it up. The Sixers go up 3-2. Boston ties it up again, and then we go to game seven. And there were a number of close games. You know, Boston won the first game of that series by 2 points. In that later on, the Sixers, Boston also won a 5-point game to extend it in game six, to extend it to game seven. So there were a couple of close games. In fact, all of Boston's wins were close ones. They won a 5-point game also in game four. The Sixers won more convincingly in their wins, but this one was a close one where neither team really was able to pull away, and the Sixers just outlasted them with a real just a real gritty effort.
There's something that I noticed though in that series. Free averaged 15.3 points against the Celtics while coming off the bench, right? But when you look at his career, I mean, we talk about Andrew Toney as being a Boston Strangler. Now, I'm not calling World Be Free the Boston Strangler, but he had success against the Celtics. He averaged 21.2 points in 44 regular season games against the Celtics. That's not bad.
Oh, no, not at all. And Keith, you might not call him the Boston Strangler. He says, and it's part of the story, giving a little bit away, he said he was the original Boston Strangler. he just got up for playing the Celtics and just loved it. There's an anecdote too, we won't give it away, but John Havlicek came up to him and had some good things to say after the game to him, and he thought that was incredible because he kind of idolized Havlicek. He said, you know, being from New York, whenever he played the Knicks, he'd watch him play and stuff like that. So a lot of great stuff about, you know, going back and talking to these guys. And what I was amazed about was, you know, how much World remembered about this game and just really relished about talking about it. You could hear the enthusiasm on talking about this and beating the Celtics. And this was his first real experience at Sixers-Celtics playoffs or intensity, because his first year, if you recall, they used to have the best of three series, and they had lost his first year to the Buffalo Braves in three games. So this was his first seven-game playoff series, his first playoff series against the Celtics, and yeah, you know, he really relished the moment.
Yeah, we'll come right back after this commercial break. Yeah, he really relished the moment. But you know what? I kind of think that World Be Free, as good as he is, I feel like he doesn't get the just due. I mean, I look at him as the forgotten one. You know, I do. I understand, like, he was during that team, he came off the bench. But I remember once, and I said to Fred, I was like, wow. I remember once I was in Cleveland for the Sixers Cleveland game, and they were honoring their all-time greats. It was like honoring Cleveland legends. And they did something on World Be Free. You know, he was conceding, he played for the Cavs. I believe he might have led the league in scoring that year, or one of those years. And it was like a video tribute to him. And he, of course, he was in town for the game. They had him on the court, and they did like video tribute, and they honored him. And I was blown away because, you know, when we see World B now, we talk about all the community things he does with the Sixers, community involvement, and we also see him at the games wearing the nice suits. I mean, my man is the best dressed person in the arena, you know. And I have yet to see him in my 7 years of covering the team. I have yet to see the World B duplicate a suit yet. And if he has, you know, it's probably been he probably wore one in year one and wore the same one in year five or something like that that I don't notice. But he's the best dressed guy, and he does a lot for the community, and that's what you know him as. But he was a hell of a player.
There's no question about, Keith, he averaged 20 points a game for his career. And we talk about he played at a time when there were those kind of tough defensive rules in the NBA where things weren't as free-flowing. You talk about the Cavaliers, he played for them 4 years. He averaged 23 points a game for them. He made an all-star game 1 year with the San Diego Clippers. In fact, his starting backcourt mate in that all-star game was a guy named Magic Johnson. So that must have been interesting. So he was just a prolific scorer. And to me, to average 20.3 points a game he played 886 NBA games. That really shows the type of offense you have. And he had some really, really big scoring years. His final 2 years, including 1 year when he returned to the Sixers, he was not playing as much, and his numbers went down. But before then, during his career, he had just a lot of big seasons.
And it's funny because your trivia question is World Be Free when they traded him to the San Diego Clippers, right? The Sixers the Sixers got a first round pick, and they used that. They got a future first round pick, a 1984 first round pick. They used that pick to select Charles Barkley. You know, and so it's kind of like if your world be free, you'll say, okay, I was traded, but they traded me to acquire a Hall of Famer. You know what I mean? So
You know
I don't feel as bad.
what's interesting? Interesting about that, they traded him after the 77-78 season, which is a year after the year you and I were talking about. And they didn't, as you mentioned, and they didn't get that pick till 1984. So they got a little bit lucky that year, and they were able to get Barkley with the number 5 overall pick.
I'm wondering why. I mean, maybe did he say that he was a little disappointed though when he was traded, when he left, or was he excited because it gave him more of an opportunity to be a go-to guy, more of a, you know what I mean, more of a star, a starter?
To be honest, I didn't ask him about that, but I think he did relish the fact that he was able to really fire it up. Do you remember, Keith, his first year with the Clippers, he averaged 28.8 a game, and in the following year he averaged 30.2 a game. And he only played with them for 2 years. So maybe some teams didn't like the fact that he just really always filled it up. But everywhere he went with Golden State, he scored then. You talked about Cleveland; he was a prolific scorer then. He could always score, and he took on all comers.
Yeah, he was a great one. Hey, this is a great series, and I want to thank you for sharing it. And like I said before, y'all, make sure you go on to Enquirer.com and you read these great series. The first one, number 12, we talked about on Friday, is when Allen Iverson scored 55 points against the New Orleans Hornets. And this one is when, World Be Free had 27 points to lead the Sixers to a victory against the Boston Celtics. And tomorrow we're going to, I'm not saying what it is, but tomorrow we'll be back to talk about game number 10. Mark Narducci will share it. But again, do yourself a favor and read these things on Enquirer.com or pick up the Philadelphia Inquirer and get this information. And Mark, let them know. And I know, like you guys, right now, Mark is being a trooper. He's doing this series. At the same time, he's helping out on the news side with coronavirus coverage. But make sure you do yourself a favor and give my man a follow on Twitter. And Mark, where can they follow you on Twitter at?
At SJNARD, SJNARD. Yeah, thanks, Keith. And it's great reliving this stuff. It's really a lot of fun.
Oh, it's fun to me, just reading your stuff. And SJ means South Jersey. For you who don't know, Mark Narducci is the king of South Jersey. Like, when the, let
I
me
don't
tell
know
you how.
about that.
Oh, whatever. Let me tell y'all. When I first got hired in the Enquirer, what I had to do is my first beat was covering soccer in South Jersey, right? So I remember I go to the first couple meets, and I had a soccer coach who I respected, and he says, "You're doing a hell of a job." I'm like, "Oh, thank you." And he says, "Yeah, hopefully one day you can be as good as Mark Narducci." And I was like, "Well, who is Mark Narducci?" And then you came to it. I think it was like the South Jersey coaches tournament event, and one day you just showed up, and they're, "Oh, that's Mark Narducci." Like, yeah, but you were like very well respected. But it was good though. You stayed out of the picture. Like, it was like, I mean, you let me do my work because, but at that particular moment, when the coach told me that one day you could be as good as Mark Narducci, that's when I was like, wow, he's a legend over here. And then it's funny, like, who was it? I was talking to a college coach a couple days ago, and he brought up your old TV show and how they used to use that. Like, they used to recruit, but they always wanted to know what you had to say about the local kids. So, Mark, you put a huge imprint. So when you say SJ Nard, I get it. I get it.
I've lived here my whole life, Keith, so I've always loved the area. Love South Jersey.
Right. Are you really from Washington Township, though?
Well, I'm from nearby Blackwood. That's where I grew up.
Oh, okay.
So
All right. Yeah.
yeah. So I've only lived within a 30-minute radius my whole life.
Yeah.
I haven't left the area, and at my age, I don't plan on leaving it either.
Yeah, don't move to New Orleans.
Yeah.
All right. All right, brother.
Hey, good
I
talking to you, Keith.
great talking to you, and I want to thank y'all for listening, and have a great day. Peace.